Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens, and remember that this is your show. Folks, if you've got questions you'd like to have answered, if there is a topic you'd like to hear a little bit more about in that economic world, feel free to give me a call, 719-500-8700. You can also shoot an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to the website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click that contact tab up there in the top right corner. Send us that question, send us the message, send us a topic. We'd love to hear from you. And Andrew, it's almost training camp season.
You know, I think by the time this airs, most of the training camps are underway.
Yes.
I mean, there's a certain team that's going to win the North that's been going on a little bit because we're kicking off the season. But Broncos started this past week. I mean, it's that time of year. We're under 50 days until kickoff.
It is. It is. Which also means we're dead center in the baseball season.
Yep.
That nobody cares about so much in the state of Colorado anymore.
It'll be interesting to see because I hear there might be a fire sale up on Blake before the first.
You know, having seen enough games at 20th and Blake this year, I'm not sure there's anything to sell.
Well, I mean, we had that series against Washington, and there was that, you know, who's going to have the worst record in the league?
Very true. Very true. Very true. You know, the funny thing that I have seen recently, though, is there was a thing I saw yesterday on Facebook that claimed the best quarterback in the NFC North was Jordan Love.
Well, it's better than a lot of them saying that it's a running back claiming he's going to throw for 4,000 yards.
Oh, that's true. That's true. He's not the best quarterback that team has ever had, and he's not even the best running back because Walter Payton used to play for those guys.
I mean, he might throw 4,000 yards, but to everyone except their newly acquired pieces.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Now, what I really need to know is, George, who in the world is Love going to throw to? Because all his receivers are playing with the Jets with their old quarterback.
Who never got the weapons that he needed in the old city.
Yeah. I have no idea. Maybe it'll be a skip play where he throws it out, it hits a tackle's helmet, and the center can catch it and run. I don't know.
I know who he's going to throw to.
Who?
C.J. Gardner-Johnson, Kirby Joseph, probably a couple to Aiden Hutchinson for good measure, just like last year.
Yeah. Very nice. Well, folks, we are joined on
rebuilding year.
We are joined on Money Matters this week by the tax man, George Sleeman. George, welcome in. I officially have to say, because LPL will make me say this, that LPL Financial and FRS Financial do not endorse the guests who appear on Money Matters. But that doesn't mean we don't believe that you are wholeheartedly, you know what you're talking about here when it comes to the tax world, George.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Well, that's right, folks. We are midsummer, and we're talking with the tax man. And as I was actually telling my wife, who was going to be on the show this week, she said, "Why are you talking taxes in the summer?" And tell me if I gave the right answer, George, because I told her, it's always tax season.
This is officially tax season 2.0 for this year.
Okay.
The official tax season ended April 18th this year because the 15th was on a weekend. But now we've got extensions. And this is the time that people come in the door and say, you know, I need to get right with God. I haven't filed in 5 years. Can you do it for me? We don't slow down. The only thing that changes is I don't work weekends. Otherwise, we're just as busy year-round as we are during tax season.
Well, the good news is, as a Packer fan, I'm not sure they're working weekends this year either. So
yeah, especially on Sunday.
Well, folks, we are talking today with the tax man, bringing up a variety of different pieces, not only that we're looking at right now, being in the midst of, you know, tax season 2.0. But we're going to talk a number of different things. Later on in the show, we're going to talk a little bit about some of those, I guess I should say, those commercials I'm not real sure about what they're trying to sell me about, settling my tax debt. But George, I want to lead off with this part today. Back in 2017, we had what was called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act that was passed. And it did a number of different things. It theoretically simplified the 1040, except it just made the form 2 pages and added a boatload of pages to all of the additional pieces you've got to have.
Right.
But it made some changes, right, with what you can deduct for yourself and dependents and all that kind of stuff. But that wasn't permanent when it went into play.
No. Temporary tax code change due to sunset in 2025.
That's coming quick.
It's coming quicker than everybody wants it to. What's going to happen with those sunsetting provisions? There's three big ones that matter, really. Mm-hmm. The standard deduction, the tax brackets, and the tax rate, and then the exemptions for your dependents, which currently don't exist.
Right.
Because they almost doubled the standard deduction to cover all of that. They made the child tax credit from $1,000 to $2,000, with $1,400 of it being refundable. Those provisions in and of themselves are going to, in my opinion, it made it a lot easier because the standard deduction was so high that many, many people could not itemize anymore.
Yes.
They couldn't take the home mortgage interest. They couldn't take the taxes, which were limited at $10,000. I mean, I had a client the other day that I was presenting his return to him, and he's like, what do you mean I couldn't itemize? I paid $27,000 in taxes between property taxes and state income tax. And he did. But that's capped at 10 grand. So he wasn't able to itemize, and he wasn't any too happy with the tax bill, I'm afraid.
Well, and George, is that something that, you know, could maybe be kind of the way of the future to kind of avoid some of those itemizations and just keep with those larger standard deductions to try and kind of make it more universal?
Well, right now the standard deduction is indexed to inflation.
Okay.
So it goes up every year. And in this economy, with this inflation,
yes,
it's going up every year. It's simpler to do that. Mm-hmm. Because you don't have to then try to figure out all the medical expenses, because you still have to hit 7.15% of your adjusted gross income, and then you can deduct everything above that. The charitable contributions in Colorado, I'm going to tell you now, people, keep track of those no matter what. Receipts for everything. Because even if you can't use them on your itemized, you can use them on the state if you don't itemize. So to answer your question, this higher standard deduction does simplify things. I think it should stay. Whether it does or doesn't, that's way above my pay grade. That's going to be the politicians who decide if they want to be reelected or not.
Yeah, and that's one of those things that we you know, kind of looking ahead, right? 2024 presidential election year. 2024, we also have, obviously, the entire House of Representatives. We have a third of the senators. Theoretically, that should be one of those hot-button topics that is out there on that campaign trail for folks, regardless of which party they're running for. That hopefully is something that does get discussed, which is also why we're kind of trying to bring that out right now as well.
Yeah, and it should be discussed, because that is probably one of the biggest things that's going to need to be discussed during their entire first term or current term. When you're dealing with people's taxes, you're dealing with people's lives. Would I love to see a flat tax? Oh, yes, absolutely. Will it happen in my lifetime? I don't think there's a snowball's chance in Hades.
And George, as we mentioned too, it's, you know, that time of year where obviously you're catching up on a lot of people's, you know, extensions, getting those done, as you mentioned, kind of getting right with Uncle Sam. But before we know it, it's going to be the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
We're start having W-2s come out. So if we're already starting to think about some of those documents, some of those things you say we should be tracking, like those charitable deductions, what else should we be doing now to make it that much easier come the first of the year?
Well, if you're not doing your tax planning now for 2024 tax season and you're a small business owner, you're late. You need to be looking ahead all the time. For the 2023 tax season, just keep files simple.
Okay.
Don't bring every receipt for your medical expenses to your tax preparer and expect them to add it up. Add up your deductible is probably what you paid. Add up all your co-pays and give them the, this is how much I spent on doctors, this is how much I spent on prescriptions, this was my after-tax contribution to my insurance premium. Keep those in a folder so that you can add them up. Know where your money's coming from. It is amazing to me how many people don't realize, you know, I'm getting dividends from LPL. No, they're not going to send me anything. And, you know, we start the return, we finish the return, we file the return, and then they bring in, oh, by the way, I forgot this. Know where your money's coming from. Expect a document from anybody sending you money. Do those things as a basic rule, you'll be fine.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. Even as we are in that tax season 2.0, halfway through the year, it's also a good time to kind of take a look at some of that, maybe that some of that planning we did for 2023 and see, are we on track? Have we made more money than we initially anticipated? Are we making less money than we anticipated? It's a good time to review that part as well, right?
Oh, especially if you are on the exchange for your health care. Because, you know, you think you were going to make 40, you ended up making 50. Notify the exchange. Let them know, hey, I'm making more money. Stop giving me as much premium. Because at the end of the year, you got to pay it back. Now, if you told them you're making 40 and you only make 30, you'll get excess credit on your return in the form of a refund or against your tax debt. But if you get too much, you will pay it back.
And being able to look at those things, not just from, you know, maybe that individual who is an employee for somebody else, but even as a business owner, there are things that we need to be looking at as well.
That's correct, because you need to be aware of what your tax liability is going to be. If you're a business owner and you've got a profit loss for the end of June, you're halfway through the year. Double it. Unless historically you have a great fourth quarter and a weak third quarter. That's where record keeping comes in. If you have 3, 4, 5 years of P&Ls, look at those quarters individually. See what kind of growth you have or decline you typically have, and then we can manage your estimated payments. We can manage your tax debt so that the elephant in the room at the end of the year is my analogy, a big elephant. You can eat it all in one bite at the end of the year, and that's hard to swallow. Or we make estimated payments, and we take 1/4 of it at a time. Or better yet, if you have a W-2 wage, you can take it at 26 bites by just increasing your withholdings a little bit.
Yeah, and that's one of those pieces that really, when we start thinking about those folks who maybe operate their own business, whether they're self-employed, whether they're, you know, they've got the business itself or it's a shell account business for other things that they own inside of it. Right. That's where, as that individual, that tax planning really does come into play all year round.
Absolutely. And you know, when you look at an LLC, most common form of business structure, single member LLC, you can be taxed as a sole proprietor. You can be taxed as a subchapter S corporation. There's things that trip falls, if you will, that fall on both. The LLC is a disregarded entity, single member LLC.
Mm-hmm.
you're looking at a Schedule C on your 1040, and you're going to pay self-employment tax on all of your profit. If you are a subchapter S corporation, you're not. However, there's a thing called reasonable compensation. And if you don't hit reasonable compensation, you can get yourself into a ringer. Reasonable compensation is complex in its entirety, but to boil it down very simply, what would you pay someone to do your job? I know S Corp owners that I've talked to year after year after year, 12 grand is not it. You could not hire somebody for $12,000 to do everything that you do. 40, 50, 60,000, yes. The flow through that's larger than that won't have any self-employment tax. And that's the profit above and beyond your payroll. That's mm-hmm. the flow through. Whether you take it or not, it's yours. Whether you take it in a draw, and a draw is not an expense. It does not lower your profit. It does not increase your expenses. It's a balance sheet move versus a income statement move. And I'm not trying to get too technical on it, but these are important factors when you have those business types. And if you don't know what you have, come see me. We'll figure it out.
And that you kind of started to get in there, and I want to go to maybe not the tall weeds, but the first cut of rough, if you will, off the side of the fairway here, and that's in looking at, as that business owner, paying yourself a W-2 versus a 1099 versus what you're taking out in that draw. What are some of the things that you help folks kind of walk through with that to make all of those different determinations?
Well, you can take the 1099 off that list completely. A self-employed person never issues themselves a 1099. Never issues themselves. We have had to send corrected 1099s to make it a zero for people who thought they did.
Mm.
They will pay self-employment tax on that 1099. If you have an S corporation, you're giving yourself a 1099 to pay self-employment tax on money that you wouldn't have had to.
Ah.
If you're an S corporation, you will pay self-employment tax when you do your W-2 for the reasonable compensation. That's all the self-employment tax you'll pay. Anything above and beyond that in profit won't have it. The draw, like I said, is a non-deductible expense. It's as you said earlier when we were talking, it's an expenditure, but it's not a tax expense. So knowing your structure is imperative. Finding the structure of your business that works best for you is twice as imperative. Maybe you want to be in a partnership. Great. Partnerships are wonderful things. Are you a general partner or a limited partner? Well, what's that mean?
What does it mean?
A general partner is involved in the daily activities of running the business. They are involved in the production, in the management, in the decision making.
Mm-hmm.
A limited partner says, hey, here's 10 grand. I want 5%.
So kind of like the old school silent partner.
Yes. The silent partner who is truly silent is a limited partner. There's no self-employment tax on their money that they get, their distributive share, because they're limited and they do not involve themselves in the daily running of the business.
Okay.
But a general partner does. Partnerships can be a wonderful thing. If you're a husband and wife in Colorado, remember this is not a community property state. The state gets kind of funny, or the IRS, gets a little funny about a husband-wife partnership, but that's a whole nother topic for another day.
Yes, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that from that IRS perspective, not delving too far into the topic, but guessing that if the husband or wife, whichever one, is the one typically running the business, but the other spouse is the limited partner getting the non-self-employment taxed piece of the pie, the IRS kind of wants their piece of that.
More than likely, yeah.
Yeah, so and that's one of those things that we hopefully we are looking to, I guess I would say, try to avoid over the course of time is running afoul of the IRS, trying to keep Uncle Sam out of our pockets as much as possible. We are in a, I think, a good spot here to take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about that, running afoul of the IRS, and maybe some of those things that we should be looking at to make those corrections. Does that sound good, guys?
Yeah,
it works for me.
All right, awesome, folks. We will be right back right after this.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I'm Andrew Rogers, along with Rick Stevens. We're joined by the tax man himself, George Sleeman. And George, as we were talking about before the break, you know, there's a lot of things that we want to do with taxes, and I think universally the thing that we don't want to do is have any more interaction with the IRS than we have to. I know guys like you love it. Obviously, that's why you get into work. You love talking with Uncle Sam, all those IRS agents. Your favorite thing. But
right.
Sitting on hold half the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if we don't want to run afoul of the government, what are some of the biggest things that typically are those red flags, or the things that people may not realize are going to put themselves in trouble when it comes to potential for audits, things like that, Nate?
Lying, hiding, cheating, and stealing. Those are your big four.
So don't write a country song and send it into the IRS is what you're telling me.
No. Keep the pickup truck and mama out of it.
Yeah, don't try that in a small town is what you're telling me.
I have got to see that video yet. I haven't, and I hear it's
They've
incredible.
Already edited it. So
have they really?
Yes, they have.
Darn it. All right. Anyway, to not run afoul with the IRS, just don't lie.
Okay.
You have to report every dollar that you make, be it self-employment or W-2. You have to report it. And in all honesty, and it's very hard to prove, you should be claiming barter income, believe it or not. If I decide, Rick, I'm going to do your taxes, but I want some advertising on KRDO, what's the value of the advertising? That's my income.
Mm-hmm.
Or excuse me, that's the station's income, my expense. The service that I'm doing for you is an expense to you and an income to me. So bartering does, black letter law, is taxable.
Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of follows one of those lines. I'm sure it's probably still in the 1040 somewhere that talks about income from illegal activities, right? Because that's what tripped up guys like Al Capone. That's what tripped up Pete Rose with his gambling, that sort of stuff.
Absolutely. And, you know, Pete Rose, if he would have just claimed the winnings and offset it with his losses by keeping a journal of all his illegal activity, you'd have been fine.
Yes, from the IRS perspective.
From the IRS perspective.
Yeah, as long as you had a good paper trail.
Yeah. And that's what it takes. If you are... all right, we're going to go off a deep edge here.
That's okay.
All right.
We got time.
You're a sex worker. You are doing things on the side that you probably would be arrested for if you did it. If you legitimize the income, I can get you a profit loss to buy a house. Not saying the police won't be in trouble or be knocking on your door.
Right.
But you can get a tax return to get the stimuluses that come out every once in a while. You can get a profit loss so that you can buy a house. I would love to have more adult entertainment people as clients because that's legal. There's cash coming in that you know darn well they're not reporting.
Right.
But all the expenses that they can include with those, we could get them a profit loss that they're buying a house instead of renting somewhere.
Yeah, and that's one of those big things. I know every once in a while when we have mortgage folks in, we talk about that sort of how do you do things to prove the right income to get the underwriters to say, okay, yes, that's good. Because even if you work in, you're just working in a typical sales type job and you've got a 1099 because you're 100% commission, it's still hard to get that through underwriting.
It is. Yeah. You know, you mentioned Al Capone and his tax troubles. They couldn't get him through liquor, so they went to him through taxes.
Yes.
If he would have reported the income, 1099'd his independent contractors, he never would have gone to prison. It's amazing what can be done in the arena of self-employment. You can write off a ton of stuff, but don't get too creative. Your haircut is called hygiene. It is not a professional expense.
Well, depending.
No, there's no depends on that.
Have you seen my haircut? This is terribly professional, George.
Yeah, I did mine with a razor this morning, too.
As the one in the room with the hair and the job that has the appearance stuff and takes care of that, I know it could also be that taxable fringe benefit that is reported through on a every 4-week basis, maybe.
If your employer pays you to go get a haircut and a beard trim and brush your teeth, it's going to show up as a taxable fringe benefit because it is a non-deductible expense to you.
Salon services provided by Veda.
Perfect. Perfect. I love it.
Get now, that in there.
Now, when we're looking at hygiene, when we're looking at uniform expense, when we're looking at those kinds of things, I had a vlogger one time who insisted that she be able to take out all of her clothing expenses because she couldn't be seen on the same video twice in the same outfit. She had over $10,000 in clothing expenses that I told her she can't take. Because she was self-employed, those costs of those clothes were not deductible. They could be worn anywhere for anything. If it's that way, it's not deductible. Yeah. A police officer has a uniform. If he has to buy it, that could be in 2025 deductible as a W-2 expense. But there are no unreimbursed business expenses for W-2 people. There's no such thing as a self-employed cop. At least there better not be. Firemen, same thing. You know, if you have a shirt that's embroidered with your company name on it, and it's not safety gear, you can't take the expense for the maintenance and upkeep of it. But it's an advertising expense when you buy it because it's logoed. So why not take that expense as advertising and quit trying to jimmy around with, well, I'm washing and drying my clothes and it takes this many hours and I'm doing it at home and it costs 35 cents to run the just stop. It's not going to work.
Well, it's the same argument, too, with the work truck as well. You just because you're doing, you know, business and all of a sudden slap a sticker on it, you can't claim that $80,000 brand new truck as a business expense.
If you have a mileage log and can prove 100% business use of that vehicle, we'll take it.
Okay.
But if you don't have a mileage log, you don't have an automobile expense.
Yeah.
Period. End of story. There is no ifs, ands, or buts. The IRS, when they audit you, they will want to see, typically, they want to see automobile expenses, meals, and one or two other expenses. But those are the two big ones that they really focus on. Reasonable compensation is a whole nother thing, but they will want to look at that. If you don't have an automobile log showing miles, it has to have when, where, why, and how far was it. Mm-hmm. You have to have those four things. If you don't have that log, you will lose that expense in audit. No two ways about it. I would love to argue with it. And there is some, I can use the Cohan rule, which dates back to the 30s, to say, hey, it's reasonable that he was some mileage. Now let's figure out how much. But throwing a sticker on the side of your car or a magnet on the side of your car, the cost of that magnet or sticker is advertising. just because you're driving back and forth to the grocery store does not make that business trip.
Okay.
Yep. And that's also then one of those things, because we, you know, we talk with the insurance folks from time to time. We talk with the attorneys from time to time. That's also one of those things that just increases your liability if you're out doing things non-business related and you've slapped the business sticker on that particular vehicle.
Do you have commercial insurance to cover that vehicle? Oh, you don't. I'm so sorry. Denied.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy, but it's true, folks. You cannot sticker up your car and call it a business expense just to drive around. Now, there are companies out there that will pay to wrap your car with their company stuff, and they'll pay you per mile for driving.
Because you're a moving billboard.
Because now you're a moving billboard. But your individual company that you have a vehicle that you own, that you drive, you're not going to get that to fly more often than not.
Well, it's the same idea, too. Buying that sticker or magnet is your advertising expense. You get wrapped up for George's Westside Tax Service, then it's George's advertising expense for all that moving billboard.
Right. Yeah. The advertising expense is the key on that.
Yeah. And I was going to ask, you know, you mentioned that this, you know, big things that would be looked at in an audit, and especially for those small business owners. But say you're just maybe a normal W-2 person that may have thought, oh, let me try to cook this a little bit, you know, kind of that Better Call Saul mindset, trying to, you know, increase that refund. What are some of the biggest things that on that side of thing for a non-business owner are really going to be looked at or maybe scrutinized when it comes to audit time?
When you have expenses, like there's a remote working nowadays.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's very popular. A lot of people do it, and they're on W-2. They think when they take that job that they can write off their home office, their computer, their internet, their utilities based on the percent. I'm sorry to say, and this rotates back to the sunsetting in 2025, there is no unreimbursed business expenses for a W-2 employee. The biggest way to drop your income as a W-2 employee is pre-tax deductions. Anything and everything that you can get taken out pre-tax or your employer, do it, with the exception of long-term and short-term disability.
Okay.
If it's taken out pre-tax,
mm-hmm.
It is now a taxable event if and when you ever have to use it. But if you pay tax on the premium and then pay it, when you receive that 66.66%, it's non-taxable. Highly worth doing for the low cost that it is.
Awesome. Now, I know, and I hear commercials because I'm in my vehicle a lot. You've seen my mileage log. In my vehicle a lot. Got the radio on. I hear commercials all over the place. And one of them that jumps out at me every time, every single time, are the attorney groups that start out by saying, you know, the IRS is hiring this many employees and they're cracking down on this, that, and the other. And they're trying to basically drum up business for their tax settlements.
Through fear.
Exactly. Exactly. When it comes to that settlement side of things, right? You've not paid taxes in 2, 3, 4 years. You owe taxes. Is that real? Is there truly a tax settlement that these really crazy tax attorneys can get you? Or is there actually something a little bit different that the IRS truly goes through in that process?
It depends.
Perfect legal answer right there.
No, if you owe over $10,000 in tax debt, call this number now. Some of those companies might actually be legitimate.
Mm-hmm.
But if you watch TV a lot late at night, like I do, you will see some of the commercials are the identical ones that they had 5 years ago, but the company name changed. You know why that is? It's because the IRS said, that's a fraud. And they shut them down. And so they reopen under another name. It's like all them illegal massage parlors that are actually houses of prostitution. You shut one down, two more open up. It's crazy what people think they can get away with. Is there a tax settlement? Yes. What is it called? It's called an offer in compromise. Homeowners who have owned their home for the last 5 years probably will never get an offer in compromise.
Mm.
They bought their house for $250,000. It is now worth over $500,000. They have equity in their house. You fill out the financial disclosure required for an offer in compromise. Showing that equity, the IRS, more often than not, and I'm not saying it's 100%, okay? I'm saying everyone that I've done has been rejected because they own a car free and clear, an extra car. Mm. They could sell that and pay their tax debt. They have equity in their house. They could take out a HELOC and pay their tax debt. You have $100,000 in cash value life insurance. We never should have bought that to begin with, but you have that. You can pay your tax debt. You're not going to get an offer in compromise on owing $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 if you have assets. I just don't see it happening. Now, if you owe hundreds of thousands, yes, contact one of those attorney groups, but make sure they're a real attorney group and make sure that they are vetted and that they have actual experience. I'm not saying that they're all bad, but the ones that you see on TV at 2 o'clock in the morning, I probably wouldn't call them.
Yeah, probably not the ones to go to. And, you know, that being said, what talking about assets, there's also a lot of people who may come up and say, oh, I didn't realize all of a sudden there is a tax lien on this property. That's not really the case. It's not something that the IRS is just going to all of a sudden slap and do unless you're really digging your head in the sand.
You would have to very much dig your head in the sand. If they put a lien on your house, you're going to know it. Because they're going to send you letter after letter after letter after letter. And then they're going to say, if you don't pay this debt by X date, we're going to do this. And you'll get about four or five of those. And then you'll start getting registered mail that you have to sign for saying, hey, buddy, pull your head, pay this tax, or we're putting a lien on your house. Then the lien goes on and you are served with a copy of the lien. How do you not know this? Living under a rock is about the only answer I got.
And if you're technically under a rock, they're probably not putting a lien on that rock.
Probably not on that rock. No.
So when we're looking at this, and let's just say somebody does have that hundreds of thousands of dollars of IRS debt, and they can go through that settlement process, and, you know, I'm just going to throw out round numbers because I like to work with round numbers. Let's say they owed $100,000.
And 15 cents.
And 15 Ooh. Cents that I'm going to round up just because. And they got it settled for $10,000.
Okay.
What happens to that $90,000 difference between what was owed and what the settled amount was?
If you're thinking a 1099-C and that's what you're asking, it is not considered income. If you go bad on a credit card and they write off that credit card, they're going to send you a 1099-A. That's just warning you, hey, you're going to have some taxable income coming at you that you did not see in your pocket. And then you'll get a 1099-C, and that is the cancellation of the debt. At 90 grand that just got canceled from the IRS, you're not going to see those things. That is an agreement. But I'm going to caution you very strongly. If you enter into a payment agreement with the IRS under the assumption that you maintain this payment agreement for all that being written off, you better not miss one single payment. Because if you do, you're in violation of that contract. And now that 90 grand, it comes right back. So until you pay off that complete and total debt, it's hanging over your head. Don't miss a payment. Make it automatically withdrawn from your bank account on the same day of every month. Plan for it to come out. Make it come out. Don't go default.
Yeah, and that's one of those things. And knowing about the IRS, what I know about the IRS, you miss that payment, the 90 grand comes due, and I'm going to guess there are probably some more penalties and interest also added yes. into that as well.
Yes.
Just one of those things that, you know, when you kind of break it all down, the IRS likes their money.
You think?
A little bit. A little bit there.
You know, there's the possessive form of their, T-H-E-I-R. I can't spell very well.
Yes.
Yeah.
T-H-E-I-R-S. Theirs. There's a reason it's spelt that way. Theirs. The IRS. That's the only way I know how to spell it.
Oh, I love it. Well, folks, we are up against that next break in today's show. When we come back, we're going to talk, George, we're going to talk some happy stuff here as how to kind of put off some of those taxes you may have discovered in the capital gains world. We're going to talk about that to finish up today's show. We will be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Well, folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break. Rick Stevens with you here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group. In studio with Andrew Rogers, with the tax man, George Sleeman. George, we you know, went over some heavy stuff there in that that last segment. Talking about, you know, taxes and owing and all of that sort of stuff. But I want to switch gears a little bit here and talk about the ways to effectively and legally kind of push some of those potential taxes either A, down the road, or even B, off the table entirely. And that's in particular for folks who have a lot of capital gains. Can you start, though, by kind of explaining to the listeners what a capital gain is to begin with?
Absolutely. A capital gain is when you buy an asset, stocks, house, collectibles, something like that.
My baseball cards.
Your baseball cards you can get capital gains on. Absolutely. They're collector's items. They have to be recognized as collector's items. You have to get an appraisal of those collector's items. But yes, they are collector's items. You probably have a 50-cent basis in it when you sell it for $10,000, but that's okay.
Well, one of them I got a $50 basis in because that was what the King Griffey Jr. rookie card cost me way back when.
Do you have
in
a
1989.
Receipt? Do you have the receipt?
Not on me.
Yeah, you find the receipt, otherwise you don't have a basis. But what it is it's the difference between what you bought it for and what you sell it for. That's the capital gain. 1 year and 1 day or more is considered long term. That's capped at 15% unless you have over $430,000-ish of income, and then it goes to 20%, which still ain't bad. Short term capital gain is if you own it for 1 year or less. Very, very sharp distinction between the long term and short term. 1 year and 1 day or more. Or 1 year and less is short term. Short term is taxed at ordinary income. So whatever tax bracket you're in, that's what it gets taxed at. Advantageously, long term is better. You're going to get a better tax rate. You're going to pay less in taxes. That's the long and short of it. There's other things that go into it when you look at real estate, but for the simple definition, difference between sell and buy.
Awesome. So we're looking at that capital gain. And I know there are a lot of folks out there who are business owners. Maybe they started their business 20, 25, 30 years ago, getting ready to retire. They're going to sell whatever their business is. So there are going to probably be some decent capital gains mm-hmm. in that over the years.
Hopefully some receipts
along the way. Or, you know, maybe it's somebody who inherited an investment from mom, dad, grandma, grandpa when they were younger, and now we're 30 years into owning the Microsoft that got, you know, given to us in 1991.
Split and, 37 times.
And it's just grown insane. And there would be all these ginormous capital gains. There are certain things out there that can help to basically offset any of those taxes that would be on the capital gains, right?
You're absolutely right. If you're looking at real estate, there's the ones that everybody seems to know about, like-kind exchange, commonly known as the 1031. You can sell an investment property and buy another. Mm-hmm. There's the REIT, Real Estate Investment Trust. You sell your house to the REIT. You don't have to pay capital gains. You get dividends for however long. I'm not sure exactly how those work. I just know that it is a tax planning strategy to avoid that capital gain. But the qualified opportunity zone is a really interesting one because it doesn't matter what form of capital gain it is. It doesn't have to be from real estate. It could be from stocks. It could be from collectibles. It could be grandma's inherited stock. And you sell it, you've got $100,000 in capital gains, and you're like, oh my God, now what? Well, you can pay tax on it at $15,000 approximately, and then have the remainder, or you could invest it smarter into a qualified opportunity fund. Now, qualified opportunity funds have been around since 2020-ish, I think.
Mm-hmm. Somewhere in there.
Anybody who had invested into a qualified opportunity fund by or during 2021, the rule is that in 2025, you will pay the long-term or short-term gain on that tax. There's implements and tools, as you're aware, Rick, where you can take a loan from the QOF and that can pay your tax and all that stuff. But as we discussed, there's no real, that I'm aware of either, what happens if I didn't invest in it now, but I want to do it in 2023? When do I pay that long-term capital gains? That's a good question, and it has not been clarified. They, as a matter of fact, just clarified not too long ago that you'll pay it in 25. In like 23 or 22, I think they came out with that clarification. So we're waiting for some backdoor dealings as normal with with all that. The capital gains can be deferred, like you said, or completely exonerated. That's not the right word, but you know what I mean. your long-term capital gains, if you have it in that qualified opportunity fund for the set number of years that it needs to be there, and it doubles in value, there's, you know,
right,
all kinds of things, your gain is non-taxable. It's the best Roth I can think of if you've got big dollars coming in.
Right.
Now, you always also got loss harvesting and stuff like that, right, that you right. do to help offset all that stuff when it comes to the stocks. But if you have a huge capital gain, you may want to talk to your financial advisor, and I know a guy, about a qualified opportunity fund to avoid that capital gain altogether.
Yeah, and there, I know, you know, having looked through these and understanding them, there are a variety of different, basically, steps, stages, all that sort of stuff that a fund has to go through to be a qualified opportunity zone fund. Some very specific government regulations on there, not the least of which is it's got to be operated in a government's opportunity zone.
Right.
That
those
they
are
defined.
Those are typically economically depressed or
yes.
Disadvantaged areas, and you're trying to reinvest into that part of the community.
Yeah, and you know, some of those things that the actual opportunity zone has to deal with, some of their regulations. And that's going to be things like within X number of days, you need to have made X dollars worth of improvement. You know, they can't just go buy up an entire city block somewhere and let it sit.
Like Detroit.
You know, you get that for $10 in Detroit, and you can't just let it sit. You have to do something with it. You have
right.
to create some economically viable things going on there. But yeah, in that grand scheme, in that big picture of things, for the most part, the things that I have read is if you've held it for those 10 years, and in those 10 years, they have been following all of the right rules and regulations, you actually end up without truly owing much at anything on the capital gains
right.
for that, because they just went, thank you for doing it. We're going to increase what your cost basis was now.
Right. And that's the biggest thing, is if you can get that cost basis, be it a step up in basis, or a qualified opportunity fund step up, the higher your basis, the lower your capital gain. And that works beautifully. Now, my understanding, too, of the qualified opportunity funds is that when you do draw the money out after the period, it's completely tax-free.
Yes.
So it works. It's hard. It's not easy. I mean, good Lord. The old Kmart on Powers, if that was in a qualified opportunity zone, that would almost be a perfect spot for a self-storage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have the money to invest in a qualified opportunity zone to get that, but if I did, that would be an awesome one to do.
Right. And there are those places, you know, whether that's locally, whether that's in the state, whether it's national.
Well, cannot be international.
Right.
It has to be Alaska, Hawaii, lower 48.
Yep. Yep. So what you're telling me is I can't go open up something in maybe Puerto Rico because it's a territory rather than the states.
Yeah, that's a gray area there. If you can get the Qualified Opportunity Fund recognized in Puerto Rico, yeah, that would be a great place to do it too.
Yep, for sure. So with all of these different things kind of floating around us, not only on that, you know, the tax planning side, sitting down, talking to folks, getting this year's plan in order. Hopefully we started this year's plan last year, right? Coming back through, making sure it's all working well, starting those 2024 tax year discussions. Looking at things where, you know, I may have had a close relative who recently passed that now I'm starting to inherit things from. These are all good reasons to make a phone call and sit down and chat.
Absolutely. You have to, because if you don't, you're going to be surprise.
And yes.
Nobody likes a surprise when they're done visiting with me. I like to have it where I know that you understand before we even do the return, there's probably going to be a hit on this or you're looking good. One of those two. It's scary when I have a return I'm presenting to somebody and they owe $15,000. I cry. I mean, looks like it anyway. I'm sweating because I don't know if they're aware of this or not sometimes. And I love it when I say, yeah, you owe $15,500, and they're like, oh, my God, thank you so much. I thought it was going to be over 20. I feel great.
So that was our conversation a couple years ago. Thank you, George. I thought I was going to owe more than that.
Yeah, we've had that conversation. But with the tax planning part, if you do that, then at the end of the year, I see that you owe $15,000, and I'm like, oh, good, that worked. We expected 20, we saved 5.
Or we get to that, hey, 1 year I owed 15. The next year, on my part, I took the initiative to actually do the tax planning that my tax guy may have told me I needed to do year over year, and come back the next year, and it's as close to a break even as I've ever been between what was owed federally, state, both Colorado and Illinois versus what was coming back. And you know, makes me happy to know that from the planning process, we can get close to a break even on there if we're paying attention.
Yeah, that's ultimately a end goal because you don't get any kind of interest on having that being held by Uncle Sam or anything else. It's not a savings account, really.
Yeah, if I can get a client within $1,000 net of zero, that's my first goal.
Mm-hmm.
You either get a refund or you pay. And when you add those up between the federal and the state, if you are in the $1,000 range, either back or owed, I'm good. Once we hit that, then we can start tightening up to get it where you're darn near break even. But it takes a lot of planning. Things change. Circumstances change in your life. The accountant is not the only person in the world that you should only talk to or... The accountant is not somebody you should talk to once a year.
Right.
It is somebody that you should talk to 2-3 times a year. You need to make the effort to reach out to your accountant and say, hey, business is going great. Let's take a look at where we're at. Can we figure something out? Or business is taking a downturn. What can I do? business is going crazy. I'm making more money than I've ever made. Get your butt in my office. Let's sit down and talk and go over the strategies to help you save the taxes or help you save the business.
Yes. Yes. So if folks do need to reach out, if they're out here going, my goodness, I've had, you know, A, B, C, D, F, G, whatever, just stop off at Walmart and let them fill out my 1040 for me, and they really offer nothing. But I need help. George, how do they get in touch with you?
You can come by the office at 2640 West Colorado Avenue. That is our main office. Or you can stop by 2930 North Academy, and we'll talk to you, make an appointment, and talk to you. Call 719-445-0085. That's 719-445-0085. And let's get your tax planning done. You like email? Great. George at Westside Tax Service, that's singular service, .com. And I'll get back to you. I do everything I can to answer every email within 48 hours. Tax season, forgive me, it'll take a little longer.
Which, again, is year-round now.
Well, yes, but I'm talking tax season 1.0, okay. Not 2.0, or even 3.0, which will be between September 15th and October 15th.
Busy man.
If you have extensions, don't wait till the 14th.
Oh, yes.
So it's not like, you know, the normal one where you don't wait till the 15th. You don't wait up until the day of the extension?
No, you don't ever do that to yourself or to your practitioner. You know, at Westside, we've sent emails to everybody that has a business that's an S-Corp or a partnership, and we told them if we don't have your information to us by August 1st, we will not guarantee completion before the September 15th deadline. The penalties for not filing on time are steep. The extension goes away. Failure to file penalties can be up to 25% of the tax that Wow. you owe. If you're a corporation or a partnership and you've got K-1, stockholders, shareholders, it's $200 basically per month per shareholder.
Whoa.
We had a client that had 15 different shareholders.
Ouch.
Imagine what that bill would have been had he not gotten his stuff on time to file.
Yep. Very, very big stuff. Well, folks, if you've got those tax questions, give George a call. Go sit down with the folks over at Westside. That is all the time that we have for this week's Money Matters. We will be back again next week continuing to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.